You know it's good when we're still going to Kauffman Stadium and Labor Day is on Monday. Something is going well for the Kansas City Royals. I mean, we just had Nebraska in town. It's week one of college football. The Chiefs are a week away, and we're still talking Royals. Vern, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Vern, I don't know if we've ever done this before, at least not in the 2020s. I don't know if we've done this. Were we doing this last year?
Doing what?
Haven't talking this late into the season.
I would hope so. They went to the playoffs last year.
Okay,
yeah, of course we were. Yeah, no, we talked. Of course. You know, it's a big boy city. You can talk about baseball and football at the same time.
Right now, we're talking to our guy, Josh Vern. You're happy to have him on the show today. Vern, do you hate Nebraska? Have you guys got to the point in the Big Ten that, like, you just dislike Nebraska, or did it just not matter to you guys?
I hate them because they stole half of that national championship back in 1997 because Scott Frost was up there crying, Tom Osborne. Right, it was Tom Osborne's final season.
Yep.
Was that Scott Frost? I just remember some white quarterback up there boo-hooing for Tom Osborne. So, but no, they don't matter in the grand scheme of things.
Desmond Howard running back that kick return and then doing the Heisman celebration after is like one of the coolest things ever.
Yeah, that's Ohio State, though.
I'm just thinking in general. Like, just like really cool. You know what I mean? Like, I was just thinking a little Michigan. Just a little.
Nobody cooler than Charles Woodson. To me, he has the greatest trophy case in the history of defensive football.
All right, Vern, let's talk about the Royals. You don't seem like you want to go on this nostalgic Michigan, we hate Nebraska together. Just trip down memory lane with me. So let's talk about the Royals here just a bit. This is the point that I made earlier. At some point, in order for the Royals to stay fed, you got to eat something other than bad teams. Like, you got to have a well-balanced diet. Nobody is saying you got to sweep the Tigers or sweep the Blue Jays or the Phillies, but you got to stay afloat against those teams. Keep doing what you're doing against the White Sox and the Nationals, absolutely. But if this team misses the postseason, they'll miss it because of June. They'll also miss it because they just haven't been able to stay afloat against the good teams. You got another series against one of those teams. You got a 9-game homestand here, and it starts off against the Tigers. You got to get off to a good foot. You got to get off to a good start against Detroit.
Did they have that balanced diet last year? Because they made it to the playoffs last year by feasting on bad teams, most notably the Chicago White Sox. The record this season against above 500 teams, to me, is somewhat overblown. The reason why, if this team falls short, the reason why they're going to fall short of October is their offense. It has nothing to do with how they performed against good teams. They were a bad offense, maybe the worst offense for 3.5 months. That's the reason why this team, if they ultimately do fall short, that's going to be how, in my opinion, 2025 is going to be remembered. But you have 28 games to go. You're 3 back of the Seattle Mariners. Yeah, every game's a playoff game from here on out. Whether you're facing the White Sox or the Detroit Tigers, they're all massive. And when you look at the schedule, yeah, there are a lot of good teams. Do we call Cleveland a good team? Does Cleveland match that criteria? Because at one point they were an above 500 team. They might not be when you get to Cleveland. Right now they're at an even 500. So I don't know, man. I just have such a difficult time lending all that much credence to the win-loss record of the early point of the season and acting as if it has any sort of has any sort of reflection on this year's team, any sort of reflection on this current team, because it's just so vastly different with the addition of Frazier and Yastrzemski and the loss of Bubic and Cole Reagan. So everything that happened before the All-Star break is, basically a different team. Now, what matters is they lost a lot of those games. Yes, as you're pointing out, 2 winning teams. But the reason why wasn't because the other team was good. The reason why they lost so many of those games is because the offense was so bad.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Vern, looking at the Detroit Tigers, I mean, this was a, it feels like they were around 500 team last year at the trade deadline. They ended up making a lot of moves. People thought that they were waving the white flag. They've been one of the five best teams in baseball since last year's trade deadline. What turned things around for this Tigers team where now they have the most wins of any team in the American League?
Well, you go back to last year. They traded away Jack Flaherty, parted with a bullpen arm, traded away Mark Canna. I think the buy-in last season, not just from the guys in the bullpen who were extraordinary to finish off 2024, but also buy-in from the starters to know, hey, you're on a really short leash unless your name is Tarek Skubal. You have to throw in the fact that they do have the best left-handed pitcher on the planet. This season, Javi Baez could be the comeback player of the year. Spencer Torkelson is finally looking like that 1-1. And then the way that they, a lot like the Royals, play the matchups. For as many people in Kansas City that scream that all Mike Yastrzemski and Kyle Isbell need to be in there against every left-handed pitcher, you know, Detroit has a guy that's much better than both of those guys in Kerry Carpenter, and he's not out there facing every single left-handed pitcher. So they have a really good manager. They have a really good roster. They attack the bases. To me, they remind me a lot of the 2015 Royals in the reckless abandon in which they attacked the game in. I enjoy watching them, and sadly, they're the team that I was hoping the Royals would be this season. They're having the sophomore album that I was hoping that the Royals would here in 2025. They've put this division on notice that we're going to be a problem for a while. I was hoping that was going to be the Royals.
No, that's certainly a good analogy when it comes to Detroit. I am curious to get your thoughts on this. The Royals, I mean, you would think just in theory, you mentioned the offense against Skubal, like you would think that Skubal just gives them fits. They've actually had a lot of success against him this season. They're 2-0 against him. Why do you think they've had success against him?
Well, one of them, they won the game 1-0. Michael Wacha took a one hitter, I think, into the eighth inning. So Wacha won that game. The first time they beat Skubal this season, it was because it was Tarek Skubal. And it was an offense that was drowning, as it always was in the first half of the season. But they knew, right? I mean, the track record speaks for itself. If you're going to step up in the box against Tarek Skubal and think you're going to take him to the 10th row, you're going to pull this ball into the stands, you got another thing coming. No, you better have a up-the-middle, opposite-field approach. Take what the pitcher gives you, you know, lay down a bunt if you have to. Do what it takes to scratch across one run against a guy like Skubal, who the Royals will see coming up on Sunday. You had Vinny in the lineup. I think he was hitting 6th or 7th because he was struggling so much early in the season. So they moved him down to face the lefty, and he was a part of a multi-run inning early on in that game. So, when you're facing the best, it's a lot like when people come to Arrowhead to face the Chiefs. You know you need to be on your P's and Q's. You need to have the best possible game plan and approach if you're going to beat the Chiefs. And if you're going to beat Tarek Skubal, you better not try to play hero. It better be team ball. And that's what it's been twice. Two of the three times the Royals have beaten Detroit this season, Skubal's been on the hill. And once again, Sunday, it's Skubal-Wacha. So we get that great pitching matchup one more time.
Vern, I'll get you out of here with this. I know you don't get a lot of these, at least until kind of the mid and late fall. But let's say you're having people over to watch the game, just the fellas, you know, a couple of fellas, and you're watching the game. What's your go-to? Is there something that you're cooking? Is there something that the wife is making? Are you ordering pizza? What's a watch the game with Josh Vernier spread?
The local barbecue spot. And then if I can, I'll make some sort of like a chili con queso. So local barbecue spot and then a big old vat of chili con queso.
I didn't really take you to be a guy that's throwing down in the crock pot. I would have never guessed that.
It's too good, man. I end up eating the entire thing, and I never even end up touching the barbecue. I just wolf that stuff down. I'm a pig, man.
What kind of chips are you getting with this? Because I love the scoops. The scoops. I don't know whose idea it was to turn the tortilla chip into a little bowl.
Like the Frito scoops?
Yeah.
Fritos. See, those don't last in my house. Chips don't often last in my house. The only chip that's going to survive the night is a tortilla chip. So if there's anything else, if there's a Frito, man, I'm eating that when I get home tonight. So that normally doesn't make it to chili con queso night.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. The Royals have a very important series this weekend against the Detroit Tigers. Vern, we'll catch up with you after the holiday, my man.
I appreciate it, buddy.
Absolutely. Take care. That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. The Royals, they play host to the Detroit Tigers. I think we'll get good crowds out there this weekend if the weather holds up. It's a very important series. It's a holiday weekend. The Royals need these games. I think the Kansas City is going to show up for the weekend series against the Tigers. All right, coming up on the other side, we'll bounce back and forth between the NFL and also college football. It is week one for both sports. We'll get to it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive. Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Friday, getting you ready for week one of the college football season. Also getting you ready for week one of the NFL season, as the Chiefs, they are a week away from their game against the Los Angeles Chargers. We are less than a week away from the Cowboys kicking off their season against the Philadelphia Eagles. That is the first game of the NFL season. We are into week one of college football. Nebraska played last night. Missouri played last night. We'll talk about them. We haven't really found a lot of time to talk about Missouri and what we saw yesterday from their quarterback. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit as well. Tonight we have Auburn against Baylor. I think that's got a chance to be a pretty good game. Georgia Tech also plays Colorado later today. Very curious to see what the Buffaloes look like. They lost the Heisman Trophy winner, and say what you want about Shador, he's an NFL quarterback, so it's some turnover at their key positions. We'll see what kind of team Colorado fields this year. Really excited to watch them play coming up later today. It's a really exciting week one slate in college football. Let's get back to the top story. And again, we'll bounce back and forth in this segment talking about the Cowboys, the Packers, and also getting you ready for this weekend in college football. This is Adam Schefter. Listen to what he is hearing about Jerry Jones's logic when making the trade.
Jerry Jones felt like this was his modern day version of a Herschel Walker trade. He felt like he needed to do something dramatic to shake up things for a team that has not reached the conference championship game in 30 years, that has not gotten past the divisional playoff round in 30 years. And by making a blockbuster, shocking trade the way he once did with Herschel Walker, he could inject youth and picks and another player into his team and recreate some of that excitement that the Cowboys had the last time they went on an extended postseason.
All right. This is the frustrating part about this analogy. You didn't get anywhere close to what you got for the Herschel Walker trade. If that's what we were discussing with the Cowboys, if we were discussing how they got a once-in-a-generation type haul for Micah Parsons, I don't think it would be that big of a deal. Obviously, we would talk about it. It would be discussed, but I don't think the Cowboys would really be getting crushed for the move. I don't know if people kind of remember the details of the Herschel Walker trade. The Cowboys got 6 picks in that trade. The Cowboys got 2 for Micah Parsons. What the Cowboys got for Herschel Walker, they got a first round pick in 90, 91, and 92. They got 3 second round picks in those same years. They also got a 3rd and a 6th round pick. And that's not to mention they also got multiple players in the deal. They gave that up for a running back. And Herschel Walker is great. We ain't talking about Barry Sanders. We ain't talking about Walter Payton. Herschel Walker was a good back, great back. It's not close. This is not the Herschel Walker trade. This isn't even the biggest compensation that we've had in the last decade for a player. The fact that Jerry sees this as a big blockbuster trade and how this is the foundation of them turning things around just shows to me how out of touch he is with where we are today. I get how if you get 3 first round picks and 3 seconds, and now you got a lot of ammunition to kind of wheel and deal. That makes sense to me. The Cowboys did this in August. You know what they did? They traded Micah Parsons for Kenny Clark, and they got two future lottery tickets that could end up being big-time pieces for them. It could end up being a whole big bag of nothing. That's how the draft works. But if you get six great assets and picks, you can trade two of them for established players. You can then make a selection. You can move up. You can do anything you want with the compensation they got from Herschel Walker. That's not what we're talking about with Micah Parsons. If you were going to make this deal, the sentiment needed to be that you got 200 cents on the dollar, that you completely overcharged, that when you look at the Kelly Blue Book value, it says 15, but you got 24 for it. Well, then you got to sell the car in that scenario. If you got $200 face value in some tickets and somebody comes and offers you $700 for the tickets, babe, you know what? I'm happy to watch the game at home. We'll go to the next Chiefs home game. That's not what we're talking about with Micah Parsons. So I think that's really, really important to note in all of this. That's just not what you got back in return. It still blows my mind when thinking about this trade that the Cowboys traded him to a team that's better than them. That's the part that just I cannot get over. When the Chiefs had Tyreek Hill and they were going to trade him, they were going to trade him to the Jets or the Dolphins. You ain't really that worried about either one of those two teams. Yeah, the Jets, you can have them. You haven't made the playoffs since the Y2K era. Great. If you want Tyreek Hill, Miami, okay, here, take them. Get what you want. It's not like Kansas City traded them to Baltimore. It's not like Kansas City traded them to Buffalo or Philadelphia or one of those kind of teams. They traded them to a team behind them in the race. I don't understand how the last time you were in the playoffs, this organization could put a clown suit on you the way that the Packers did. You then give them your best player and now think that that is going to help you close the gap between you and them. The logic behind it is so flawed to me in all of this. If you want to trade them to an NFC team, fine. Trade them to the Arizona Cardinals if you wanted to do this. If you really wanted to trade him in the NFC, trade him to Carolina. There's a chance with Carolina you get the 7th overall pick. Why would you trade him to Green Bay, a team that's better than you, a team that's more consistent than you are? It's not like we think that Green Bay is going to give you the 9th overall pick. You traded Micah Parsons for the 25th and 27th overall pick in the next two drafts, and you think that's the Herschel Walker kind of package? It's just nonsense what we're talking about with this Dallas Cowboys team. Nathan, it's nonsense.
Yeah, you're telling me that the New England Patriots were not offering a package that would start with two first-round picks? They had to have been. It also blows my mind that just like you, that this team that acquired him is now the second favorite team behind the Eagles to come out of the NFC. The thing that upsets me the most about this Micah Parsons trade is that Jerry Jones, at the same time, as you just heard Adam Schefter, believes this is the move to shake things up because they haven't been deep in the playoffs in 30 years. I don't understand how getting worse today breaks that streak. You get Kenny Clark, who fine, run-stuffing interior defensive lineman. Maybe he's a Pro Bowler for another couple of years. And you get two future draft picks, which, like you said, are going to be late in the first round. So what's the best-case scenario there? George Karlaftis on next year's Cowboys team? And that's what they got for... I mean, what is Micah Parsons? The second best pass rusher in the NFL? I'd probably go Garrett one, and then I'd probably put Parsons over TJ Watt in the two, but you could debate the two and the three
for
there.
Sure.
I mean, so it's not even close to the same compensation. I understand Herschel Walker was great. Even the Tyreek Hill trade, the Chiefs got five picks back for him. So you could at least understand that, well, hey, the roster looks worse today. I can see the building blocks for the future. Two draft picks and an interior defensive lineman. This is... You cannot, on one end, say that this is just a business decision and it was not personal, and then also say, we're going for it this year as well. This is a 6-7-1 football team. I don't think it was much better with Micah Parsons on it, but they've punted on this season with this trade.
I don't think that Jerry was capable of removing his feeling and emotion from a business deal. You might be a little too young for this, Nathan, but there's a movie. It's called New Jack City, and in the movie... The main character, Wesley Snipes' character, says, it's business. It's never personal. I'm reading this story. I was reading it during the commercial break. It was on ESPN.com, and it was like reasons why Bill Barnwell thinks these trades happen. I really like Bill Barnwell. The number one reason he put Jerry Jones believes that he had been betrayed and decided to take a stand against a player and an agent on principle. There is no room for that in business. We're talking about the football business. This is what I believe happened. And I think we have enough reports from around football to think this is what happened. I think that Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons had an informal conversation about his deal. I think that Jerry said, I'm going to take care of you. I think they were talking very specifics, numbers. I do believe that Micah Parsons shook his hand. Now, I don't think Jerry Jones said, I'm going to offer you this. Micah Parsons shook his hand as an indication of, I accept the deal. But I think in the way that Jerry does business in an old school kind of way, when you shake a man's hand, your word's your bond. When you shake hand, that locks in your agreement. I didn't think that Micah Parsons went to his agent, said that he shook his hand on this deal. I think his agent said, no, you're worth more than that. Let me take this over and I can get you more money. And Micah Parsons was like, cool. And then we started down this road. It is important to note that it is a violation of the collective bargaining agreement for a player to negotiate his contract directly with an agent. So Micah should have never been in that situation. I also think that Jerry Jones at 82 years old shouldn't be as emotional as a 26-year-old. I get why Micah is a little bit emotional, right? He podcasts, he does this stuff. We've seen him go off on Twitter. I understand how he has impulse control issues. I don't get how an 80-something-year-old man does that, especially when you have been the kind of businessman and oil tycoon that you've been. I think Jerry got his feelings hurt. I think Jerry took that handshake to mean, we don't need to negotiate this anymore. You've agreed. There's more work to be done. You then found out that, no, that was not the case. Now that same person that you shook their hand is now asking you for more money and wants more things. And I don't think that Jerry could ever get over that. I think that blinded him in this and made you, at least in the short term, to make a very, very foolish decision.
Yeah, I've got two issues with Jerry Jones's feelings getting hurt, like you mentioned. One is this whole we do business by we made a verbal agreement. We shook hands. It needs to stand for something. I'm drawing a line on the sand. That's immediately negated by circumventing Micah Parsons' agent and this whole thing. So best case scenario, Jerry, is you're right that you had a verbal agreement. But you also did wrong, and you were equally wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. Everyone's parents told them that growing up, and you're an 82-year-old man, like you mentioned. But the second thing is, I'm sure you've had buddies like this, C-Dot. I've had buddies like this. You know, you're sitting there. Maybe you're out, maybe you're at home, whatever, and their relationship has fallen apart recently, and he's getting back on his feet, but he's still in that stage where his feelings are hurt. And maybe you see a picture of the ex out with her new man or whatever, and he starts saying things, oh, I make more money than him, I'm better looking than him. That's exactly what Jerry Jones is doing right here. He's going on about the guaranteed money. He's going on about the substance of the offer he made to Micah Parsons. So on one hand, he's saying, hey, I drew a line in the sand. And on the other hand, he's saying, well, I had a better offer on the table than the Packers did. He's so emotional and frustrated by this that he can't even, you know, keep that line of thinking straight. He doesn't know which angle he wants to take. He's just butthurt about the situation.
I have a side note that has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, and I promise you we'll get back to it, but I saw this pop up on social media, and I have to ask you the question. Do you have Facebook, Nathan? I imagine you have Facebook, right? It's the second most popular website on the internet behind Google.com. Everybody is on Facebook. I'm sure you see this all the time. Do you think that our friends and our relatives know that the picture that they're sharing is AI? Because how often are you just scrolling on Facebook and it'll be a clear fake story and a fake picture? It'll be Patrick Mahomes at Denny's holding a debit card and paying for a mom and seven kids to eat. And then it's like people commenting underneath it, which, okay, I don't assume those are real people. I wouldn't really care about this. But then it'll be your mom's best friend that is sharing the picture, like, oh, that's nice. And I'm sitting there thinking, you can't see that that's not Patrick Mahomes. What's going on here? Every time I get on there, right now there's this AI concert thing, like, oh, would you go to this? And I'm like, you guys can't tell that this is not a real concert? What is happening here? Does this? Am I the only one that has this happen? I wish we had the text line up, but we don't have the text line. We haven't had the text line for like 2 days now. I normally would be reading you guys' text. The reason I haven't been is I cannot see the text line. I cannot be the only person that every time I, and again, I don't even mind that the AI stuff happens at this point. I can see what's real and what's not real. I only care that people you love are the people that are sharing this thing. And then I don't want to think differently about you. Like, you've been my brother. You know, I was in your wedding. We're really close friends. You're falling for AI pictures on Facebook. This is who you've been the whole time. I start to question my own friendships when I see that.
You're not the only one. It drives me up the wall. I don't understand how AI gets people. And maybe that's just because I haven't been got, to my knowledge, yet. Maybe it's coming for me one of these days, too. But it's usually those of the older generation. And if my mom's listening, I'm sorry, Mom, I got to do this to you. You know that I love you. My mom's a pretty forward-thinking person. You know, she'll bring up a social issue or a more of a modern concern. And she'll say something. And I'm like, Mom, it's actually pretty forward-thinking. I think a lot of people your age, you know, wouldn't have that line of thought towards that. So I got to give her credit. But then last week, Carrington, she shares a news article that's clearly fake about some old lady flirting with cops on the side of the road. It's a picture of a lady with a walker, and they're putting her in handcuffs, and she's saying something about, you know, getting together with one of them. And like seven of her friends her age in the comments are like, dude, this is so clearly fake. Like, did you get hacked? What's going on? This happened literally a week ago. I had to give her a phone call. Like, Mom, you got to take that down. Like, what are we doing? I'll send you the post. I'll find the post. I'll send it to you. Show you what I'm talking about. But man, it must be because it hasn't happened to me yet. And like I said, maybe it's coming around and I'll be the first one to admit that when it does. But I don't understand.
I don't know how you can fall for it. I really wish we had the text line up for this topic. I really do. I don't even see how you could fall for it. It's not even like the AI pictures are good enough to look believable. And the stories they always put with it are the most ridiculous stories that you have ever heard.
Oh, it's Travis Kelce carrying a puppy and the apartment's on fire behind him or something. And it's like it's like a cartoon. It looks like a cartoon.
Did you see the one fake story that was circulating the internet? This was maybe like 2 months ago. It was like Lucas Erceg, but I think it was like other players that like donated like 90% of their salary to this charitable thing.
It was
like,
Chris Bubich.
Hey, like, it was Chris Bubich. How many different players on the Royals do you think are now just playing for free because they care so much about the wildfires in California? You think the whole team just ain't getting paid anymore? Look, what do you guys think?
These are important causes. I'm not trying to make light of them, but the headline was literally Chris Bubich is solving world hunger. That's like literally what the headline was. Dude, it's out of control, and it's a scary statement on where society is headed. We don't need to go down that road and get too doom and gloom, but I do not understand. I never once have I even thought to myself, that's real when it's AI. It's so clearly fake to me. I just don't understand it.
Well, every single time. Let's get back to very serious sports things. Another thing I actually saw on the internet, and this time it was real. Mark Donovan wants to continue having games like they just had yesterday at Arrowhead. This is a phenomenal idea. It's not like you thought of something like that couldn't have been thought of. Now it's just simply the execution of it. I think that a majority of us are all in favor of every year in August to kick off the season, one of those regional old Big Eight teams will play a game at Arrowhead to kick off the season. There's money in it for everybody. Now, maybe you're not asking one of the local schools in this to give up a home game, but I think we just saw there's a lot of schools like Cincinnati that are very happy to give up a home game. So Missouri doesn't have to give up a home game. KU doesn't have to give up a home game. Iowa State, Nebraska, Arkansas, any of those teams that are within a driving distance of Kansas City, but if clearly evident, Cincinnati had a game that was meant to be played on their campus. At first, they sold it to Indianapolis, and then the Chiefs basically bought it from Indianapolis. Everybody came up financially. Now, everybody wanted this but Cincinnati because they lost the game. But trust me, if the Chiefs are willing to guarantee that amount of money for an opponent, they will get good opponents and good teams to play at Arrowhead. Your favorite college team is not guaranteed $6 million at the gate for a college football game. They're not. That's not where they're making their money. They're making it off television. They're making it off other things. They are not guaranteed to get $6 million off tickets, parking, and all that for every single college football game. So a lot of schools will be very interested if that's the case. It's also something, as the Chiefs, whether they get a completely brand new stadium or they go through a massive renovation, people will just want to play there. We see that. Now, this weekend, now I understand that Atlanta's a better college football hub than what we're talking about. Atlanta has back-to-back days of college football games. They have one tomorrow night and one on Sunday night. So back-to-back days in one of the marquee new stadiums in the country, they're having big-time college football games. I think Tennessee plays there, and then there's another game of South Carolina. South Carolina plays there on Sunday night. So I'm talking real good teams, teams that regionally make sense. A lot of people from Knoxville are making the trip to Atlanta. A lot of the people from South Carolina are making it a weekend trip to go down to Atlanta. Why can't Kansas City with this either? They have the newest stadium in the NFL or a completely renovated stadium with a $1 billion facelift. They could be one of those teams. You're not hosting a bowl game. It's in the winter when they have bowl games, and they're not putting bowl games outside in Kansas City. I'm sorry. They ain't putting them there. They might put them outside at Fenway Park or in Wrigley Field. Kansas City is not getting a bowl game, but you can get one of these early season kickoff kind of games. So I'm super interested in it. I hope that the Chiefs continue to do it. I hope that they continue to find teams that regionally and locally make sense to play at Arrowhead, to play in these little one-off regular season games. Yesterday was just a good look for everybody.
I got to agree. I think week one is perfect. As you mentioned, it's a cold weather city, and we're not getting a bowl game. But I also think that Nebraska was the perfect team to kick this off. Well, going back to the KU home games last year due to the renovation, because before that, you know, the college football games that were played here were Northwest Missouri State against Pitt State, right? Which is great, but like this is a different level we're talking about here. And I think going forward, if any local team plus Nebraska, OU, Iowa State, you know, teams that are in that sort of 3 to 4 hour driving distance away, if they're playing a big non-con game, you got to think Arrowhead in week one is the venue for that non-con game. If K-State's hosting a, I don't know, an Ole Miss or something in a non-con game, put it at Arrowhead Stadium.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to the top stories of the day. We're getting you ready for week one, whether it's college or the NFL. Football season is officially here. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive. All right. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day. I want to make one point, and I think this might be the most important point that I've ever made on this show. Part of being in a relationship is you have to be interested in things that your partner is really interested in. Like some of you were watching Love Island. You don't care about Love Island. You watch Love Island because the person that you love watches Love Island. You're watching Real Housewives of the Potomac. You didn't know where the Potomac was, but you were watching this show because the person that you love loves this show and you want to make them happy. That's why you're watching Extreme Cheapskates, because you want this person in your life to be happy. Taylor Swift is a billionaire. She's a billionaire. Taylor Swift could quite honestly be doing anything in the world outside of on a Thursday night. She is in Kansas City, Missouri, watching Nebraska, who won 7 games last year, play Cincinnati in college football. Just imagine that. Imagine that. Imagine the amount of love that you gotta have for your partner when you could be doing anything else in the world. You also could be hanging out with quite literally anybody you want to. Tomorrow, if Taylor Swift's like, you know what? I really want to go have dinner with Adele. She could have dinner with Adele tomorrow if she wants to and eat at any restaurant. You know what? She loves Travis Kelce so much. She is in Kansas City, Missouri on a Thursday for a game that kicked off at 8 Central. And she's watching Nebraska-Cincinnati in a college football game. And honestly, seemed to be into it. Like, seemed to be cheering and watching it and having a good time and socializing. She's paying attention. She all right with me, man. I'm serious. She cool with me. I don't know why people got a problem with Taylor Swift. She cool with me. That's real love. Think about it. It's hard for you to get your wife to sit down and watch the game with you. Your wife barely wants to watch the Chiefs. They keep going to the Super Bowl. Neither one of those teams are going anywhere near that level of success. But she's just right there supporting her man, loving on him. Hey, babe, I'm interested in what you're into. If you want to watch Real Housewives of Atlanta, I'm right here watching it with you. That's real love. That's how you know it's real. When you start watching Twilight, when you've seen all the Harry Potters with your partner, that's when it's real. That's when you know it's love. Because you don't, where's Hogwarts? You don't even know what it is. What's Quidditch? But you know because the person that you love is interested in Quidditch, is interested in Hogwarts. That's why it matters.
I'll do you one better. That's the most important point anyone's made on this station in its history. What I'm going to do is have you start over. I'm going to save it. I'm going to send it to my fiance in case I need that on a rainy day. Now, our relationship right now, we've got that type of love, man. If she wants to do something, I want to know all about it. You know, same with me. She wants to know all about it. But I don't know if I'm going to need this in 20 years from now, so I'm going to save what you just said and store it for a rainy day. Hey, babe, I bet Taylor Swift would watch this game with Travis Kelce.
100%. Thank you. You know what I mean?
She not only is she watching a college football game on a Thursday in August in week one in Kansas City, Missouri, she's quite literally watching someone impersonate the groomsman in her wedding. It's a Patrick. She might as well be like watching an Elvis impersonator in Vegas. Like, she's whatever Travis Kelce wants to do, she is down.
What would Taylor do? I mean, that's the real question. Because it's one thing for her to be really excited about football when her fiance is playing. It's another thing to be excited about football when your fiance's alma mater is playing. It ain't like Travis Kelce went to Alabama. It ain't like Travis Kelce went to LSU. So you're at LSU Clemson. It's like, oh, okay, this is the it college football game to be at. No, she was at the 14th best college football game this weekend and seemed to be having a great time. I'm telling you, Taylor Swift, she all right with me. I was thinking this about the sport, about college football. When you really look at the rankings for this year, we don't really know anything about college football into the season. We think, but for the most part, outside of Penn State, I don't know if we really know too much about this college football season. I would be stunned if Penn State was bad, just based off of they returned so much from last year. If you return your head coach, your quarterback, your two running backs from last year, and all the pieces that they have on defense, Penn State is a very, very good team. I know we think we know about Arch. We don't know anything if Arch is going to be good. The whole basis of Arch being good is we know people that he is related to that are good. That's it. That's the whole basis of why we all believe Arch is going to be good. Hey, you know who his uncle is? His uncle's Peyton Manning. Oh, well, he kid must be able to play. Ohio State, they have a new starting quarterback this year. They lost more talent than anybody last year. They lost, what, 13 players in the NFL draft last year? It's hard to maintain that level of play if you're going to have that level of turnover. Clemson's a preseason ranked top five team. They didn't beat any team outside of the ACC last year. They didn't. When they played anybody that wasn't in a down conference, they lost. They got smoked by Georgia to kick off the season. They lost to South Carolina. They lost in the first round of the college football playoff. They didn't beat anybody outside of the ACC last year. Georgia has a new quarterback this season. Notre Dame has a new quarterback this season. Oregon has a new quarterback. Alabama. There's not many things that I would say going into the season, you know. You feel a certain way, and sure, like Texas is probably going to be pretty good this year. Ohio State's going to be good based off their roster, history, talent, tradition, all of those things. But what excites me so much about this college football season is the fact that we don't really know anything about it. Like, we're all going to be discovering these things at the same time. We all think a certain thing about Arch, but we don't know. We don't know until they start playing these games. And the beautiful thing about the way the schedule comes together this season in college football is, man, a lot of these teams play each other or play good teams early on. Michigan has the number one quarterback prospect in college football this year. Bryce Underwood, freshman, was supposed to go to LSU, ended up going to Michigan. Man, they play Oklahoma week two. Like, maybe it's not Oklahoma of the past. It's still on the road in Norman in a big game, and College Game Day is there. I'm curious to see if the kid can play. South Carolina plays Virginia Tech. Notre Dame plays Miami. LSU plays Clemson. Most of these teams that we think are good, that we think got a chance to make the college football playoff or be in the mix or be in the conversation, like, there is no more running from smoke anymore in college football. Not with the playoff. Not when you can now lose. Back in the day, you had to schedule things in a way where you could, you had to try to have zero losses. That was the only way to win the national championship. You had to manipulate your schedule in a way to make sure that you had a zero in the loss column. You can have a two in the loss column. It doesn't matter anymore. You could still play for a national championship. I just saw the national champion do it last year. There is no season of college football other than last year that Ohio State wins the national championship. None. They lost two games, and they lost the last game of the season to Michigan. We used to always think you could lose early in the sport. You can't lose late in the sport. Once you get past Halloween, losing is over in college football. You can lose now late. So there's really no excuse for you not to challenge yourself and play somebody from a major conference. Sure, everybody can't play Alabama. Everybody can't play Ohio State. Missouri, you better be scheduling teams like Kansas. You better be scheduling teams like K-State. You better be scheduling teams that are like, there is no excuse anymore not to play those games. The fans want it. The playoff committee wants it. Financially, it's in everybody's best interest. Now that you're playing these kind of games, it really, really puts more of an excitement, I think, to the early part of the college football season. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the Royals as they begin their series against the Detroit Tigers. We are a week away from week one of the Kansas City Chiefs game against the Chargers. We'll continue to talk about Micah Parsons, who has been traded to the Packers. It's a lot going on. College football is here as well. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.